We sing the joy of living. We sing of the mystery of knowledge, lore, and science, of truth that is to be, of searching, doubting, testing, of deeper insights gained, of freedom claimed and honored, of minds that are unchained. We sing the joy of living. We sing of ecstasy, of warmth, of love, of passion, of flights of fantasy. We sing the joy of living, the dear, the known, the strange, the moving, pulsing, throbbing, a universe of change. Words by Dean Starr. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Dublin Unitarian Church. It's wonderful to see you all here. Whether this church is your spiritual home or you're a visitor here for the first time, you are very welcome. My name is Pamela McCarthy. I'm a member of the congregation here. The words that I speak are my own thoughts largely, so don't feel you have to agree, but please listen. If you totally disagree, please talk to our minister, the Reverend Bridget Spain, and persuade her that you need to have timetabled into the pulpit so that you can tell the whole world what I got wrong and why. Please be polite, otherwise I'm not sensitive, so it's fine, you're allowed. This is the joy of this church, that you're not obliged to believe anything I say, and the same thing applies to me. I'm not obliged to believe anything you say, but let's argue and find out. We light this chalice to affirm that new light is ever waiting to break through to enlighten our ways, that new truth is ever waiting to break through to illumine our minds, and that love is ever waiting to break through to warm our hearts. May we be open to this light and to the rich possibilities that it brings to us. Now let's sing our first hymn, hymn number 144, Now Is the Time Approaching. Let us pray. O God, When we thank you for what is given to us and not to others, let us remember to pray softly, for there will be many who overhear. Let conscience search our gratitude. This bounty did not come to us because more than others we are deserving. O God of truth, rebuke us until the needy multitudes press in upon our prayers. These are our sisters and our brothers. We are one family, O God, to whom we bring our gratitude. Help us to remember the many who will overhear. Amen. Let's now say our affirmation together from the back of the book. This expresses our views at the moment. Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest of truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve mankind in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow in harmony with the divine, this to a covenant with each other and with God. Madeline is our reader this morning.
I'm going to read you three small pieces this morning, from the serious to the not so serious. The first one is a direct translation of the Lord's Prayer, translated directly from Aramaic into English, rather than our usual version, which has gone from Aramaic to Greek to Latin and then to English. O cosmic birther of all radiance and vibration, soften the ground of our being and carve out a space within us where your presence can abide. Fill us with your creativity so that we may be empowered to bear the fruit of your mission. Let each of our actions bear fruit in accordance with our desire. Endow us with the wisdom to produce and share what each being needs to grow and flourish. Untie the tangled threads of destiny that bind us as we release others from the entanglement of past mistakes. Do not let us be seduced by that which would divert us from our true purpose, but illuminate the opportunities of the present moment. For you are the ground and the fruitful vision, the birth, power, and fulfillment as all is gathered and made whole once again. And so it is. The second piece is entitled The Smaller Beatitudes, a version of these. Blessed are those who can laugh at themselves. They will have no end of fun. Blessed are those who can tell a mountain from a molehill. They will be saved a lot of bother. Blessed are those who know how to relax without looking for excuses. They are on the way to becoming wise. Blessed are those who know when to be quiet and listen. They will learn a lot of new things. Blessed are those who are sane enough not to take themselves too seriously. They will be valued by those about them. Happy are you if you can take small things seriously and face serious things calmly. You will go far in life. Happy are you if you can appreciate a smile and forget a frown. You will walk on the sunny side of the street. Happy are you if you can be kind in understanding the attitudes of others. You may be taken for a fool, but this is the price of charity. Happy are you if you know when to hold your tongue and smile. The gospel has begun to seep into your heart. Blessed are they who think before acting and pray before thinking. They will avoid many blunders. Above all, blessed are those who recognize the Lord in all whom they meet. The light of truth shines in their lives. They have found true wisdom. And because that was getting a little serious, I thought I'd add something more lighthearted. This is a poem called Differences of Opinion by Wendy Cope. And in case some of you think I'm being very feminist here, notice that you can change all the pronouns in this to any combination and it works just as well. He tells her that the earth is flat. He knows the facts and that is that. In altercations fierce and long, she tries her best to prove him wrong. But he has learned to argue well. He calls her arguments unsound and often asks her not to yell. She cannot win. He stands his ground. The planet goes on being round.
We seem to have no children in the church today, But the bad news is I need to refer to the children's story in my address, so please pretend you are all children for this short interlude. This is a traditional Indian story from the Jataka, and it starts off by asking a question. Have you ever known something, known it really well, and been certain that you are absolutely right? You're not the first. Once upon a time, there lived a king, and he had four sons. Now, the fact that the king had four sons immediately tells us that this is not a European story, because if this was a European story, we would have three. For some reason, three is the magic number in Europe, but not in India. The king had four sons. Sorry, my prejudice is showing. The king had four sons. And as they were growing up, they were constantly told stories about an amazing tree that lived deep, deep in the forest. This was the magnificent red bud tree. Now, the four lads were very, very keen to see the tree, and they all wanted to be the first to see it, to pull one over on the other brothers. Nothing changes, whether your brothers in India or brothers in Ireland, it doesn't matter. One day, the eldest brother was out in a chariot with nobody with him except the chariot driver, and he thought, great, this is my chance to get to see the red bud tree. So he said to the chariot, his charioteer, please, please take me to see the red bud tree. The charioteer sighed. It was a long and tedious journey, but then he thought, well, what else would you be doing of an afternoon? So he drove the chariot along the winding roads and the narrow passes deep, deep into the wood and stopped before the magnificent red bud tree. The prince got out and he looked at the tree. And it was easy to pick it out. It was very different from all the other trees in the forest. But he was totally disappointed in it. So he was really, really fed up when he saw this is it. So he didn't say a word. He got back into the chariot and he went home. And if his brothers had been more empathetic, they might have noticed that he was very quiet and he was very down in the dumps. But they didn't seem to notice it. They didn't care. Anyway, nothing was ever said about his visit to the magnificent red bud tree. Some months later, brother number two was out with the charioteer and he decided this was his chance to get to see the red bud tree. So he persuaded the charioteer to drive him miles and miles on narrow winding paths deep, deep into the forest. They got to the red bud tree and the brother got out. The second son got out and looked at the tree. And he was mesmerized. He thought it was the most amazing thing he had ever seen in his life. But he was so amazed by it that he just didn't have the words to describe it, so he didn't say anything. So he got back into the chariot and he went home to the palace and never said anything to his brothers. Several months later, brother number three was out in the chariot and he said to the charioteer, I want to see the magnificent red bud tree. Please take me. So the charioteer sighed, but he knew the drill at this stage. Off he went and through the long winding road to the red bud tree. Third brother got out. He could see immediately that this tree was different from all the other trees around. He just looked at it and he sort of thought, this is quite strange. But didn't say any more. He got back into the chariot and went home and never said anything to his brothers or to anybody else. Finally, several months later, the youngest brother persuaded the charioteer to bring him to see the tree. And the charioteer drove for miles through the winding woodland path, got to the magnificent red bud tree. The youngest son got out, looked at the tree, and just laughed. He thought it was a really funny thing to see. He got back into the chariot and went home, and over supper, he just started to laugh. And his brothers said to him, but what are you laughing about? And he said, I've been to see the magnificent redwood tree, and guess what? It's not magnificent at all. It's just a funny tree in the middle of the forest. There are all these beans hanging like pea pods down there. It looks ridiculous, and it looks anything but magnificent. It was a waste of a trip to go and look at this. I mean, I can see strange things anywhere. I don't have to go into the room. His brothers immediately started to argue with him. The eldest one said, no, no, you obviously saw the wrong tree, totally the wrong tree. There was nothing on it. It was just bare. It should have, instead of being called the magnificent tree, it should have been called the dead tree. Second brother said, no, no, you're all wrong. The tree was covered in blossoms, beautiful magenta blossoms. You could see them from miles around. It was truly a magnificent sight, a beautiful tree. Then the third brother said, nah, you've got it wrong. When I went to see it, it was covered with these green leaves that were very like spinach. And who wants to eat spinach anyway? And who wants to see leaves that look like spinach? Now, of course, the argument carried on, and it got louder and more boisterous until the king arrived and said, oh man, you've missed the point of this. You've all been to see the tree at different times. It's the same tree, it's just different seasons. So they were all right and they were all wrong. We will now have our second hymn, hymn number 12, O Life That Maketh All Things New. For my reading, I'm going to read an extract from 99 Names of God, written by David Stendhal Rast. David Stendhal Rast, he's still alive, although he was last week when I Googled him. He was born in Vienna in Germany just during the Second World War. He grew up in Vienna and he emigrated to America as an adult. There he became a Benedictine monk. His main interest is in looking at the differences and the connections between different religions. These names of God he has taken from the Islamic tradition. The one I'm reading is number 46, Al-Hakim, the All-Wise. Perhaps the essence of wisdom is that, unlike knowledge, it encompasses and affirms paradoxical contradictions. Given this idea alone, it is only a single step from calling God the all-encompassing to calling God the all-wise. When we think of wisdom, we initially think of the human characteristic, as did the medieval mystic Bernard of Clairvaux, when he said, "To grasp a thing brings a man knowledge. To be touched by it makes him wise." To grasp a thing gives a man knowledge. To be touched by it makes him wise. But we should not forget that human wisdom is granted to us in those moments when we let ourselves be touched by divine wisdom. Our peak experiences are moments of being deeply touched. These significant experiences that we have been given must not be wasted. We can keep calling them to memory, these moments in which our hearts transcend boundaries of reason and spontaneously spoke an all-encompassing yes. All that is missing then is for us to turn this yes into a reality through all that we do and suffer. That act glorifies the all-wise in our everyday life. Saying yes, or rather living yes, in such a way requires courage and serenity. These two attitudes are tellingly linked with wisdom in the familiar prayer of Alcoholics Anonymous. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Let us pray. This prayer will be followed by a piece of music sung by the choir, and the music has been arranged by our own Gavin Byrne, so we're in for a real treat. Knowing that we do not always live up to our best expectations of ourselves, let us in quietness seek the good within, which some call the inner light and some a spark of the divine. Knowing that we live in a society that falls far short of the ideal, let us in quietness resolve to do one thing this week to aid those suffering from want and injustice. Knowing that the earth is our home and that humankind is making it a dirty and poisonous home, let us in quietness consider how we might be part of making it more healthful for all beings. Knowing that each of us has some sorrow or worry hidden within, let us consider in quietness how we may reach out to one another with our smiles, our handicaps, and our encouraging words.
Thank you.
Have you learned anything lately, or even over the course of your life? This is a question that has been playing on my mind recently. I can't decide. Have I actually learned anything in the course of my long life? The reason that this came to mind particularly at the moment is because last month I signed up for a course in French in the Alliance Française. And I've done this several times. I mean, I've been learning French my whole life. I started learning French when I was a teenager, the year I started secondary school. And even allowing for the fact that I have no natural talent for languages, you'd think in all of that time that I would have learned something. Even something very small, but apparently not. The day of my first French lesson, about 3 weeks ago, the traffic was kind, so I was wandering along Nassau Street, heading towards the Alliance, and I was thinking, now, this is my new beginning in French, and I'm going to start as I mean to go on. I am going to order my coffee in French in the Café Max in the Alliance. My enthusiasm was very quickly dented. I like my coffee black, and could I remember the French word for black? Not a chance. And I said, I have been learning French for decades, not with very much enthusiasm and not with much talent, but surely the word for black ought to be something that would come to mind. And then I thought, oh, come on, something else, some other color. What other colors are there? White, yeah, blanc. Other colors in French, red, rouge. What is black? No idea. It wouldn't come. So I've been pondering this. How could the word, a simple word for black, not come to me in French? It's not fair. I mean, I should know this word. I'm sure I have come across this word time and time again. No chance. While these thoughts were burning a hole in my head, I heard the Reverend Mark Hutchison on one of his online events say, there is a Buddhist tradition that says the three great teachers are moon, thief, and tiger. Now, I mean, I have read a whole lot of Buddhist stuff and I've never come across that, moon, thief, and tiger. This was news to me, but nevertheless, I like the sound of moon, thief, and tiger. And this is an interesting idea. So the words or my own thoughts on moon, thief, and tiger do not come from any Buddhist tradition. These are my own off on a tangent ideas. The moon is significant, I think, because it waxes and wanes continually. It reminds us that change is always happening. And last Sunday was the full moon, and the moon was magnificent last weekend. I'm sure it's every bit as magnificent now, but it's a different season. It reminds us that sometimes there is a good time to do something, or sometimes we have to make passes at things again. This is where the children's story is significant. Bruno Bethlehem, the psychiatrist, says that these kind of stories resonate with us because we know instinctively, deep in our psyches, in the non-verbal parts of our heads, that there are not four princes. There is only one. It's you and it's me. And then sometimes to understand something or to get the complete picture, we have to go back again and again and maybe yet again. And the important thing about this is that if we have to go back and look at the tree for four times, the earlier visits have not been wasted. We have gained something by going to the tree. Our knowledge has increased. We have gained. We may think we're wasting our time, but maybe we're not. Maybe we see something else. And then, of course, to be wise, we have to go back and we have to sit in meditation or in contemplation and think about the experience. Make something of it. It's a bit like Wordsworth with his daffodils. He went out and he saw the daffodils, but He had to go back and contemplate them in his study and read through his sister Dorothy's diaries before the poem that we all know and love so well could be born, could come from his experience of seeing daffodils. It's like the tree. The tree had to be seen in all four seasons before it could make an impression, before we could know all about it, before we could put the pieces of the jigsaw together. Then we come to Thief. Now, here my prejudice is showing again. I have to admit that I'm not very interested in learning something from a thief, I think. And then I remember there's another Buddhist expression saying that everything we have is borrowed. Now, I was walking around our house and I was looking at some of the things. And I was thinking, if somebody was to come in and clear away some of the books, some of the old newspapers, some of the old clothes, they'd be doing me a favor. So maybe a thief would be a good thing if it came into my house. And then I thought, oh dear, any thief coming into my house would probably take the couch. I really like that couch. And then I thought, oh no, come on, really? Who is going to bother stealing your couch? Not a chance. Even if you leave the door open 24 hours a day for 2 weeks, nobody is going to take the couch. It's quite safe. Put that thought out of your head. The couch is safe. So too are your books. And even though it would be useful to have some of your clothes stolen, that's not going to happen either. And then I thought, but I like some of my clothes. And then I thought, the Pareto principle applies to my wardrobe. 80% of the time I wear 20% of the clothes. So if somebody came into my house, as long as he didn't actually take what I am wearing or any of the stuff that's in the cycle of laundry, it would be fine. I probably wouldn't even notice. What would make a difference in my life if it was stolen? And of course, the answer is quite clear. It's my phone. It's on flight mode, so it won't beep. But if my phone disappeared, my life would become really, really difficult. I remember the trauma of replacing the phone that I had before this, and the phone before that. My daughter laughed so hard when she came into my house one day and she saw that I was writing into a notebook. I had written all my contact numbers into a notebook because I thought, if all the information on my phone suddenly disappears, my life is going to be very small. And I'm going to have a really hard time replacing all these contact numbers. How am I going to know anything if I can't Google it? If nobody can phone me, I'll have nobody to talk to ever again. That would be so miserable. But now this is where it bites slightly for me. I looked at my phone and I thought, this is where I change into the thief. This is where I am the baddie. Because there is no environmentally friendly way of getting the minerals that are essential to the guts of the mobile phone. These minerals are mined by slave labor in environmentally very damaging ways. By owning a phone, I am an effective thief. And I don't like this feeling. And I'm not sure what I can do to offset the damage done to people and environments by me having this pretty amazing piece of kit in my pocket. This is a tough one. It's the same thing then. There was a report during the week that the marine environment around this country is degrading very badly. And let's be honest, this is partly my fault. I mean, I am gaining the benefits of the system that degrades the environment. I am stealing the marine environment from the generation that will come after me and possibly the one after that. This is perhaps why in all our ethical and religious precepts, we're always told, don't tell lies, don't steal. And I thought these would be quite easy things to fulfill. I mean, I don't go around taking things off of people, and I hope. I mean, I behave. I'm not in jail, obviously, so I mean, if I, I haven't done anything that would be that far out of line, but still, my lifestyle, my possessions, perhaps amount to theft. It's a sobering thought, and it's a scary one. We'll move on to tiger. I think tiger is wonderful. Who cannot think that a tiger is an amazing beast? You see them in zoos, or you see pictures of them. A tiger is huge. So I think that we are naturally built to be afraid of tigers. Is there anything more frightening than an enormous beast with huge, powerful claws and really, really big teeth walking very quietly through the jungle, round the corner of the street, behind the bushes in the park? We're programmed to be terrified of the thought because our ancestors did have to fear the tiger. Blake was right when he wrote, "Tiger, tiger, burning bright, living in the forests of the night." We can all feel it almost in our breath. We don't know what we're afraid of, but this primeval fear kind of grips us. The difficulty we have now is that living in secure, safe, civilized society, we still get adrenaline rushes. We still wake up in a sweat in the middle of the night, terrified of something. Our cortisol levels rise, but we have nothing to do with it. We can't run. I mean, you look stupid if you're running down the street and somebody says, What are you running from? And they say, "The tiger!" You'd be locked up, you'd be carted away. We have to find ways of dealing with the primeval stress that we no longer need, the alert system that sparks our nervous system but then just lets us there in a state of high alert. And we need something else to do, or I do anyway, besides reaching for a piece of cake or something else equally useful. In conclusion, I'm going to return to my cup of coffee in Shea Max. I went into the cafe and I said bonjour to the barista and I said, "I am really sorry, I can't remember how to order a coffee in French. So is it okay if I ask for a black coffee and a croissant in English?" And he said, "Oh, thank God," he said, "I don't speak a word of French." And I said, "What? Did you not learn any French in school?" I feel my mother's influence coming on. I was indignant. "Did you not learn any French in school?" And he looked at me and shook his head and said, "No," he said, "fortunately I did German." So I think the important thing is perhaps to make contact with the person, to have a cup of coffee, even if you can't speak the French. Then 2 hours later, 2.5 hours later, I was wandering up Kildare Street, having come out of my French lesson and been far too ashamed to ask the teacher, "What is the French for black?" When I remembered, it's noir. So I did. It's a pity it didn't come to me at the opportune moment. And then to make matters worse, I remembered that in French culture, you do not ever need to ask for a black coffee. If you just ask for coffee, they will give you black coffee. You have to make a special effort and demand milk to get a white coffee. So, did I learn anything? Who knows? Maybe I'm a bit wiser, maybe I'm not, but I live in hope that someday I will know more than the word for black and white and red and French, and that I will be able to order something more exciting than coffee. Thank you. We will now take up our offertory collection. But please remember that you can also contribute online. Thank you. Thank you to Kaylee for providing the music. It's very kind of you. Beautiful music, Kaylee. Thank you. To Gavin and the choir for the musical interlude. It was amazing. Thank you to Katie for welcoming, to Madeline for her wonderful reading. To the three people, I think it's Paula, Thurin and Gavin who are doing coffee today. Don't leave them on their own downstairs when the service is over. Go down and drink some of the coffee. Our notices, I don't think we've any new notices, but Bridget has something to say.
Just to say that over the last 20 years, Paul has produced Oscult, and obviously when he became ill very suddenly, it was a jolt to the smooth running of the church and a reminder that we need more people to be involved in doing things, that if some of us fall under a bus, these things continue. So just, we're going to try and broaden the number of people involved in doing Oscult, and we have some volunteers for that. But we need volunteers to do help with everything. You know, the magazine is produced, but it needs articles. There's lots of people here who think thoughts, maybe do a bit of writing. Send an article to Oscult magazine. The same with readers here. If you have a lovely reading, like Madeline has that reading, unless it has really strong copyright issues, we can publish that in Oscult and make the magazine more inclusive. So that's what I'm trying to encourage people to be proactive in the church. If they are, we'll have a terrific magazine. If people volunteer to read, we'll have fabulous readings. In the same vein, next Sunday we're having a coming of age celebration for some of the younger people in our congregation. Now, this was postponed from March 2020. So it's a special day for two and then one who's going to join the next Sunday. But for our young people in the congregation, and this is an appeal to people who might be listening in, maybe come along next Sunday and make it a celebration of the community. And maybe one or two people might bake a nice cake to celebrate with us. So just please, the more people involved in the church, actively involved in the church, the more interesting and the more creative and the better church it will be. Thank you.
We'll now have our final hymn, hymn number 87, Nearer My God to Thee. The final blessing comes from Samuel Longfellow. With joy we claim the growing light, advancing thought and widening view, the larger freedom, clearer sight, which from the old unfold the new. With wider view comes loftier goal, with fuller light, more good to see, with freedom, truer self-control, with knowledge, deeper reverence be. Amen.